So last week, I was going on a hike with my mom.
Our mom, Paul.
Our mom, who's also my mom.
Yes, she is.
And my three-year-old son. And we're going through the forest by this dry riverbed. And there, just in the middle of the dry riverbed, was this giant, cracked, like, clay pipe. And my son was very much like, "Dad, what is that? Why is that there?" And it got me thinking about how there's, like, history in the areas that we come around. And it triggered the thought of, we always view history as being less advanced. And, like, we assume that our culture is just always going to improve. Technology is always going to improve. But that's not always been the case in human history. There's been times people write about, you know, they're camping outside of these giant ruins where they have no clue how the people, these gods, must have built this. I'm curious if that's stuff that you ever think about.
The one that pops into my mind right away is thinking about building the pyramids in Egypt. And a lot of people would say, like, we wouldn't be able to build something like this with our modern equipment. And I don't know how true that is. I just heard people talk about that. But, like, the idea, the things that people used to be experts in, we have, like, no expertise at all in. And that's, like, different types of technology, but it's something that we've, like, lost.
Yeah. I really enjoy that, the interplay of, like, archaeology and sci-fi. Mm-hmm. I think it's a super interesting, I think one of the clearest example of this is the very popular game Horizon Zero Dawn. Of, it's all this sci-fi stuff is old tech and it's in the past, but you're also, like, trying to, like, delve and discover. And I think that's a really cool formula that doesn't work with a lot of our modern conceptions of time is always progressing.
Yeah. That's super interesting. I'm also thinking about, like, books. A lot of times some of my favorite books are fantasy books that are, like, they have swords and they have bows, but there's also, like, this, like,
intricate magic
thing. And I think that those kinds of connections make for really cool stories. So, well, welcome back to Indie Q. We've been gone.
It's been a long time.
We're not dead. If you are wondering, we are still alive, both of us.
I'm still Paul.
And I'm still Brad.
That's good.
And we're jumping back in with season 3 of Indie Q. And so today we're going to be talking about the game Chance of Sennar.
Yeah, so Chance of Sennar is a point-and-click adventure game. It's a puzzle game.
But if you don't like point-and-click adventure games, don't be dissuaded from listening to the rest of this. Because I'm not a big fan, and this game is worth hearing about.
It's one of those games where it technically is defined as a point-and-click, but it doesn't feel like point-and-clicks I've played in the past. But the main premise of the game is trying to decipher these languages. You are interacting with people in this tower, and you don't speak their language. And so it's a lot of going and talking to people and not knowing what they're doing. But
they're just saying gibberish, some symbols on the screen, and you are trying to figure out what they're saying.
You have a little journal you can keep, and you personally can write in guesses for words. There's an audio component, but I would view this game's language more as it's written, but it's written in, like, text blocks above. So there is an audio component, I believe, when you're talking to people, but I completely, like, turned my brain off to that. I have no clue what anyone... I didn't listen to what they said. I read the text bubbles above their heads, which is in a, you know, foreign script that's, you know, like, no language that we've seen. And you're able to, like, put your guesses... like, I think maybe they're saying this. And then when you talk to them again in the text block, it will also have a little subsection of what your guesses were for each symbol. So I think that's really cool how you're able to basically read the language based off of your guesses. So you can put just random crap down and try to read it, or times where your guesses are off and it just throws you off for the rest of, you know, for quite a while in the game because you're, like, based off of this incorrect assumption.
Yes. And so as you're going through and deciphering this language, you will get to a point where you know for sure that you have the correct translation into English using that diary that Paul was mentioning earlier. And so that's how you are able to progress, and then there's a little puzzle, or sometimes it's a much larger puzzle, that's happening in the civilization that you're using all the information that you got earlier in that area to, like, advance the next area.
And the cool part, I didn't realize for a little bit in the game, is the fact that each area is peopled by a different culture with a different language. So you might finally feel like, oh yes, I got most of this language figured out, it's going to be a breeze. And then you walk into the next culture because you solved the puzzle and you're back at square one.
With no translations, but you have more ideas of how things are moving because you've already kind of done the first area of the game. So you kind of have this idea of what's going on.
Okay, so this game, for me, this game snowballed in that regard of, like, you learn how to learn in the game. And so the first area took by far the longest time for me. Was that also the case for you?
Yes, definitely. So Paul had been playing this game and brought it over to my house and was just showing it to me. And I was just like, immediately, yes, this is a game that I'm going to, like, love. And so I made him stop showing me what was going on. And he was just at the beginning of the first area at the time. So I wasn't like, you spoiled anything for me. But when you described it to me, I was like, oh, that sounds kind of interesting. And then you showed me the game, and I was, like, immediately hooked. I'm like, I have to play this game. But that first level was definitely the most difficult. There was one other level that rivaled it because they kind of turned the way that language works on its head in one of the areas. And so figuring those kinds of things out makes you feel really smart.
So just taking a step back, I'm curious, did you have much of any experience with point-and-click games prior to this?
I had mentioned that I never really loved point-and-click adventure games. But there are some good games from when we were little that I definitely enjoyed. So but that was like Putt-Putt, Pajama Sam,
Spy Fox.
I don't remember playing Spy Fox, but you had said,
would you play Freddy Fish?
Freddy Fish. I did play Freddy Fish.
I think
Freddy
this is all from the same developer, I believe.
And we could have done some research, but we didn't. But that's my experience. Did you have any other ones?
Those are the ones I was thinking of as well. I know of, like, beloved ones.
Secret
like
of Monkey Island.
Monkey Island, or, like, I think, like, the Telltale games are technically considered point and click. But I've never played any of those. It was funny for me, I didn't quite realize this was a point and click game because I played it on my Steam Deck, and you literally control with the joystick your character, or you were playing on the PC, and so you were just clicking around. So I think it was. But one aspect of the game that I adored is a super simple quality of life thing, is there was a button you could push that would show you which things on the screen were actually interactable.
Clickable, yeah.
And so I feel like it saved me the tedium of, oh, I don't know which things I can even do stuff with, so I have to click on everything or move around everywhere. It was just like, oh, these are the 5 things you can do in this room. Okay, I don't have to worry about, oh, did I, you know, not click on the certain brick that was the secret brick that you needed to do.
I think that the game is extremely fair because that aspect of the game where you know the things that you can actually interact with makes it really, I think it's a fair game. And then that mixed in with all the discovery. I feel like a lot of point-and-click adventure games, there's like, oh, I found, like in Pajama Sam, I found the sock. I did the thing over here.
I got the board that lets the boat know that he can float because he's also made out of wood.
Right, and so those types of things. And
key item progression. The key item
progression thing. In this game, it's more focused on the language and deciphering that, and then using what you have learned from deciphering the language to do a puzzle that is kind of like those key items, but it just feels so much more satisfying to me to have like translated something that I felt like I accomplished something in this game as I was moving on, and it drew me in really, really quickly.
Yes. I want to make sure it's clear. In the journal, you have all of your words that you've encountered, but there's also, after certain points of experience in enough conversations with people, pictures will start to appear. And so then you have to pair the word with the picture. And each page, you know, front and back of your journal could have anywhere from, you know, 2 to, you know, 8 different pictures. And it won't verify that you have your word correct unless you have every single
word pair
that you can see correct on the page. So if you have everything right and one word wrong, it won't confirm the fact that you have it. And when we first started playing, I thought this was like some sort of next-gen, super high-tech, that I thought that you also had to have your English word
be correct,
which, you know, was like, wow, it knew that I put the right word in there, like or if it was close enough, it would change it up. And then, I don't know how long it took me to realize, oh, it literally doesn't care at all what you put, which took a little bit of the shine off me, because I thought it was like the most creative, innovative design I'd seen, to realizing it was just, oh, it didn't actually look at what you're getting. The guess is super helpful.
But it didn't require you to say man when you wrote human, like knowing that, oh, correct, person or people. Yeah. So one of the cool things, I just want to say, we're going to kind of go into a little bit more details as to some of the specifics of the game, but I don't think any of this is spoilers that would make the game less interesting or you would want to play the game any less.
The game is about the language, and we're going to stay pretty clear about like describing solutions to how to figure out language stuff. We're going to talk more about the cultural aspects of the different areas.
Yes. So as you are playing in that first area, you pretty quickly see that first culture interacting with a culture that is hostile towards it. And you can't really interact with that hostile culture until you have developed more of the language and you pass that first puzzle. And you find yourself in that other culture. So the first culture is more like a tribal culture. There's talk of priests and things like that. Whereas the second culture that you interact with is very military focused, with soldiers and like laws that are really important to them.
More industrial.
Yes. And so, and then as we continue in the tower, you're encountering more and more different cultures that value different things. Like there's a culture that values music and theater type things. Another one that is like math and science. And so it's very interesting to see how they are interacting with each other.
And it's cool how they combined the language and the words that are used to really reflect that culture. And then the puzzle that like culminates in like, you have to understand all of the language of that culture in order to solve the like final puzzle to advance to the next level of this tower that we're in, really incorporates like the puzzles. The end puzzles are so different, and it really seems to fit in with like the aesthetic and the just like the ethos of each culture that you interact with and are learning about through interacting with the different people. And I think it's really fun to start off talking to someone, have no clue what they say, but then by the end you go back and you're like, oh, they're being super friendly. Oh, that guy was being a total jerk to me and was like calling me names, but I don't know that. I enjoyed that. Able to backtrack for that, actually see what these people were saying.
Yeah, and it's one of the most interesting aspects of the cultural interaction that you see in the game is that there is a lot of animosity. Not always animosity, but there's definitely some, like, they're missing each other, where they believe things about the other groups that either are not true or they don't understand it to be in the correct way. And I feel like it parallels the way that different cultures in our world actually, like, see each other. Or not even necessarily cultures in terms of language, but just different viewpoints on things. This is your, like, tribe that you live with, and you believe all these things about the other group because that's what your group says. And I think there's a lot of very interesting pieces of that come out.
Definitely. And definitely has this like Tower of Babel kind of vibe to the game of, we're ascending this tower, trying to reach the pinnacle, and all of these peoples speaking different languages, and so they're not able to communicate, they're not able to work together, there is a lot of, you know, discord, distrust, a lot of finger pointing, assuming that these people are the reasons that our society is not the way that we want it to
be. And there's also some of the societies that like look at the other cultures and think they're so amazing because they have, like in one in particular, the warriors, the soldiers, like they think that music is like this like otherworldly amazing thing. So they like almost worship the society that can produce music, and that's what they do. And so it's interesting, just we look at ourselves and then we look at something else and we might think that other thing is horrible, or we might think that other thing is so much better than me. And it kind of it allows for both of those things, those me versus the other, that play out in our world. One of the things that, before we started recording, that Paul was mentioning to me was talking about how languages, like, even like the idea of some languages kind of like merge together, or some languages are maybe even lost. I know there's a lot of languages in the world that are maybe shifting towards like a more unifying language. Like, I know that's the case in China and India, where it's like the main spoken language is kind of cannibalizing some of the other languages. Do you think that it's, in our world, is that a bad thing? Is that a good thing? Is it a mix? What are your thoughts on that?
I have mixed feelings on it. It's nice in the sense of more people being able to express viewpoints and be able to communicate with each other, I think is really cool, and it's helpful, and it can break down a lot of barriers. But a lot of cultures have a very unique way of seeing the world, and I feel like language really is one of the first things that really show us how we interact with the world. It's how we think, and different access to different words or different ways of speaking influence how you think. And so I feel there's a some degree of, as we become more homogenous, that we're all beginning to think the same way. And I think that there is a beauty in people being able to look at the same problem and then be able to think differently to come to different solutions. And you're able to work together more with having the same language, but also I think there's a little bit of sadness when you're like, oh, this, you know, this language is no longer spoken.
And I guess a thing that is said often of like the United States, it's a melting pot where things kind of all come together and they conjoin and they are added to each other in different ways. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case in the United States anymore.
I don't know that was ever truly the case.
But it's something that people always said. And I think it's very interesting because at the same time that you're gaining something from another culture, you're also losing things from that culture but I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing in an individual culture to bring other people's cultures in and letting that affect the way that you think. I think that can be cool, but if it's like completely draining the other culture of its ability to even think because it's all getting just sucked into your culture, that's I think what you're kind of lamenting in the idea of it going away and no longer having.
That being said, though, there are some cultures that have, you know, very barbaric practices. I'm thinking of like ancient Aztecs who were very into human sacrifices, and mm-hmm. like for me, that's not so sad. That aspect of the culture no longer exists. I'm very cool with people not being sacrificed. But there is like, man, it'd be cool if, you know, these languages were still more preserved or...
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, I'm still worrying in my head because I'm like, I don't speak those languages. Most people don't speak those. Why do I want that? Why is that, just that diversity of human experience, exciting?
I wonder if part of it is, I'm going to use the word novel. It's something that you've not experienced. Like for me, when I go to like a new city, it's really exciting to me, especially if there's something there that I've never seen before. When I first moved to Pittsburgh, there is this place on the University of Pittsburgh. It's this big tower, the Cathedral of Learning. And when I first moved there, it was like something that every day that I saw it, I was like, it's so amazing. It's so cool. And I would like sit outside it and look at it and just like, it's amazing. But then I lived there for 3 years. And by the end of the time, it was just like, there's Kathy. There she is. And I don't even notice her anymore. And I think that the novelty of not knowing something and learning about that is like really cool. And then you get to know about it. And then it's just part of your everyday life now.
Which is funny because that's exactly how this game works. And I feel like this is one of those games where you can really only experience one time. going back and playing it, even if, you know, it's far enough removed that you don't remember exactly what all the words are, that whole process of, like, understanding learning how the puzzle, learning it, how to learn the game, I feel like is lost, which, if you've, you know, listened to the podcast, that's not something I hate in a game. It's not a bad thing. I just think it's a very interesting aspect that I actually think I seek out more in games. Having those experiences, like, wow, that was such a cool experience that I got to have. And I don't feel that quite as much with games that I would deem more replayable.
Yeah. I guess one of the other games that is coming to my mind right now is, like, a more platformer, and it's Cuphead is what I was thinking about. We're also playing Cuphead, but don't expect that anytime soon. Anyways, we were, so just playing that, it's like, it really lends itself to, like, this, like, improving at, like, doing it as fast as possible, or, like, you could, I could see that being a game where it's like, oh, I have mastered this, and now I want to, like, put together, like, this perfect run. Whereas in Chance of Sinar, it's not something that I would ever want to, like, speed run. It's more the knowledge gives you satisfaction rather than, like, executing to perfection. Whereas a lot of games that I tend to play are more the execution based, and because it's a point and click, I think it allows for the satisfaction to be the knowledge or the being able to figure out the puzzle.
Yeah. And for being a puzzle game, there's moments where it feels like a puzzle game, but I feel like language in and of itself creates enough of a puzzle that just triggers in our brain a certain way that I didn't ever feel like, oh, I have to solve this puzzle. It was more of like, I just want to know what they're saying. I can't quite figure it out.
But you feel close, especially when you, like, see them say something. Because I also didn't listen. I don't even know if I even had... I did have sound on, but I didn't even notice that there was, like, an audio aspect, if there is. So I would interact with the first person in a new area, and I'd just guess what they could potentially be saying to me. They're probably saying hello. So I would, like, put in all my guesses, and then I would go talk to the next person, and they would introduce a couple new words, but they would use some of the old words that I'd already experienced, and it didn't make any sense at all. And I think that was a lot of fun for me, to being like, I'm interacting with this new culture for the first time, and I'm just trying to guess what these things might be saying. It's the context clues. I don't know. I like that in even, like, languages that I know some. Like, I know a little bit of Spanish, and recently I was in the Dominican Republic, and we were talking to this guy who spoke a little bit of English, and we spoke a little bit of Spanish, but we could figure out what each other were saying because we had a little bit of context. And I, like, totally see that in this game. You see the context, just like, he's waving at you, he's probably saying hi, or like they're, like, laughing. Are they laughing at you? Are they laughing with you? Like, you're trying to figure out the context that's going on, and I think that's really cool.
That really makes me think, in the game, there are these different elevator checkpoints where you're able to fast travel between different levels of the tower as you start progressing through. And at the elevators, there's also this, like, messaging system where these people are trying to communicate with each other that aren't even adjacent. It's just like, hey, the first level people might be trying to talk to the fourth level people. But you have to know both languages to help them actually talk to each other and help them decipher each other's language. And so as you start solving languages throughout the game, you're able to then go back to these checkpoints and make these connections.
Right.
And then, I'm not sure if you noticed this, after you make those connections, if you go back through different areas, the world change. Yeah. And there are people, you know, that are interacting.
The soldiers are no longer guarding the door from the tribal priest group to come into the next area.
Like, or you might see some of the math and science people coming and helping the more tribal people with farming, or with, like, they have a drought, and so they're trying to save the plants. And it was kind of cool to be able to backtrack and then see how is the world changing and how are these people's lives improved by utilizing the strengths of each of the cultures.
Yeah.
One of the ones that made me smile the most is in the military society. There's this one long hallway that took forever to walk through, and in the background there's, like, this imposing, you know, structure. And after I made connections with the music people walking that long hallway, there's a concert going on in the background, and like the music people are up on stage, and all of the soldiers are all there. It used to be empty, and they're all cheering because they really love music. I thought little touches like that were cool. It made the world feel more alive to me.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of cool things that this game talks about, does, but I just think the mechanics of the game are so solid that it makes everything click for me.
Was there anything about the game that you didn't like? Because there's one very glaring one that I know 100% you're going to agree with me on if you don't come up with
yourself. Tell me what you're thinking first.
The stealth sections.
Okay.
They are almost unplayable, in my opinion.
I definitely didn't love so it's in the military area, like the soldiers, and they're like, if they catch you where you're not supposed to be, or if you're not, like, all this stuff,
boots you, and you have
and to... And you just throw it back over. I didn't hate it to the... There are certain spots where I was like, I didn't know how to get through this area, but then you finally figure it out. And I'm glad that it doesn't, like... It didn't kick you back too far. It, like, puts you back in that same area. It's like, go back to the beginning of that like,
room. Yeah, but a lot of it is, like, waiting for certain, like... predetermined paths to take place.
So if you don't do it the first time, you have to wait for the whole thing to happen and then get on the second loop.
Hopefully. For me, that was frustrating because the part I liked about the game was the language and stuff. I'm like, it brings you a little bit more into the world of like, hey, there's consequences. You're not supposed to, just be anywhere. But it took me away from it, or like just made you have to wait through some drudgery to get to the part of the game I actually enjoyed.
Yeah.
It didn't like overstay its welcome, but there's enough of it, especially in the militaristic society, that it was just like, this is not what I signed up for when I'm playing this game.
Yeah, I did not, that was definitely my least favorite part of the game, but it also, I agree, I don't think it overstayed its welcome, and it makes so much sense thematically for what's going on in that society. I feel like you would almost lose some element of, like, the world if it wasn't like that.
I don't know how you would do it differently, but I wish there was something that you could keep that the story cultural aspect of it, but make the gameplay actually more engaging or more fun. Because to me, it is happening, but I wasn't enjoying the process. And I wish there was a way, I think it needed to happen for like the emergent world storytelling.
Yeah.
But it just didn't, gameplay wise, did not connect with me.
That makes sense. Was there anything else that you had to push back on the game for?
There was certain backtracking stuff later on in the game that I wasn't a huge fan of, but then it did provide some of those moments where you see how the world has changed. So that's a mixed bag for me because it was not like very... It wasn't like I'm going to solve an extra puzzle, or there were some hidden puzzles scattered throughout that were there the whole time. That now I have new eyes because I know other languages. It's hard for me because the scope of the game, I think, hit a very sweet spot. I think they hit it pretty good. But there are some things that I would long for to be more of like, this is this ancient tower that has these different peoples on it. It seemed story-wise like different people over time were migrating up the tower. It would have been cool to have more puzzles related to languages from the upper levels.
Not at the lower
levels. On the lower levels, which, not necessarily work with the whole mechanic we just praised about being able to see everything that's interactable. But it made me think of Tunic in the regards of you're playing the whole game of Tunic and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, there's all these cool puzzles that are done the same way in Tunic. But I just feel like they had such a missed opportunity of like, they have all these different languages that could have interacted with the world differently.
Yeah. I'm imagining something in my head of like, you get... I don't know why I'm thinking of glasses. Probably because it's like a different shade. So it's like you have these blue glasses, and then now they make it apparent that you need to go back to the old areas, and now new things have become interactable because you can now see them. I could see that being a cool way of doing that.
At the same time, though, it's a tight, controlled game that felt the perfect length, and I feel like as you add more even cool mechanics onto a game, you can start bloating it and like lose track of the vision that you're going for. So I think they did a good job. I just feel like there's like still a little bit that they could add and still hit the sweet spot.
You have a little bit more of an itch, but it wasn't like, I don't think they missed the mark by like a wide margin, but there's like, oh, I could see little things that you could.
And for me personally, the last level of, you know, last culture you experience, which I don't want to spoil at all. The puzzles there didn't really land for me.
They're too easy or simple.
It was too brute forceable, I think, was my problem. Where I think that's the problem with the style of game is like, hey, I am confident in two of the three. I'm just going to keep those on and I'm just going to pick every single other symbol, which early in the game, I didn't do that because I thought that you need to actually know the word and you had to have the spot right. Your word had to be right and it had to be the right symbol. And if you could manage that, or if the word, you know, was close enough that you could get. A game I'm specifically thinking of is on our to be played, at least for you, which is Return of the Obra Dinn.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a mechanic where it just makes it so that it's basically not brute forcible.
Mm.
And it's a very similar thing where you're like, hey, I need to get these three people correct before I move on.
Yeah.
But it's done in such a way that it was not just...
You can't just click all the different
different combinations.
Yeah, I tried to not just cycle things in and out because you could brute force it. But it was usually not very easy to do that. You'd have to have all the possible combinations. But
basically what I was saying, though, is like... builds this really strong foundation and carries through strong with very satisfying puzzles after you learn the language. And then you get to the very final one and it's just like, thematically it hit hard, but gameplay wise it fell flat. And then it went into the backtracking and like it made up for the end game a little bit in the fact of like you're making all the connections part. I enjoyed that, but I just feel like it didn't leave a sour taste in my mouth, but it was just like kind of like a deflated final act.
Mm. Yeah. I definitely, like, as we're going through the game, I was like, why can we even fast travel? I don't know why we need to. And then you get to the end and you're like, oh, I understand why these are here now. That, like, it makes sense, like, why we would not want to have to walk back through. Because, essentially, it feels like once you finish an area, you're, like, done with it. And you are until you get to the very end, and you are trying to make all the different cultures be able to interact and, like, understand each other better. So, before we move on to our ranking, I wanted to ask one last question. Like, if you were to, like, distill down what this game is trying to say into a sentence or two, what do you think the developers were trying to say?
I think it's something along the lines of when cultures are able actually to connect and talk to each other, not past each other, or only care about what they're saying, not what the other people are saying, that humanity as a whole is able to better thrive.
Yeah. I think, like, I totally agree with that. And one of the things that I also think is, like, we as humans, we're all the same in the fact that we're humans. Even though we have differences, we still have that unifying us. And I feel like that is kind of what the game is saying, especially at the end of the game. It's like, we are all...
In this together,
we should care more about the things that unify us than the things that we have different opinions on. And I think that is something that culture, like, feeds into you being in your own silo of beliefs and the way you think. And you might interact with some people who don't have the same viewpoints as you or the same worldview as you, but you usually don't talk about those important pieces of your worldview with people who are outside of your silo. And in this game, it's literally like the different levels of the tower. They are siloed out and they're just with their people. And I think that the more conversation that people can have with people who completely disagree with them, the better. I think that that is, it makes people way more rounded. If you can have a conversation with someone that you completely disagree with and you could communicate what they believe and why they believe it to them and them saying yes, even if you still completely disagree with them, you're going to be able to like be friends with them. You're going to be able to live life with them and like interact with them in a way that's actually meaningful. And I think that that is something, even if the developers weren't trying to say that, I think that is something that I'm reading into the types of things that are that come about in the game. That gets me. That's something that I care about a lot. And there are so many people who I know that I care about who I completely disagree with on a lot of different things. But being able to like connect with something, whether it's a board game or just talking about like politics or something like that, that you can have a conversation that's like real, but also disagree and want to be friends still, I think it's a great value.
I think it's time to move on to ranking. It's our first time really implementing our new ranking schema.
I don't even remember exactly what we called them, but I have some stuff written down as to, like, we had four different areas of the queue. We have the group that's skipping the line. They're right to the front that we think you should play first. We have the ones that we think deserve to cut. They got to cut the line, but they're not jumping all the way to the front. They're just cutting most of the line. Then we have those who are waiting their turn. And then those at the end of the line, got to boot them to the back. Where do you think Chance of Sinar lands of those four areas for you?
For me, I think this is a very middling game.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of good aspects of it and stuff I really enjoyed. I think it hit its intentions like to pretty close to a T of what the game was setting out to do. So I would say it's either going to be in the bottom of Cutters or the top of Wait Your Turn for me.
And I think I would put it more in the Cutters, like the ones that we really think that you should put ahead in your queue rather than back. As we're looking at this kind of area, I'll read the bottom part of the Cutters and the top part of the Wait Your Turn, and we can kind of talk about that. So this is Towerfall, the Forgotten City, Tunic, and Neon White, and then moving down to the Wait Your Turn, Salt and Sanctuary, A Short Hike, Crypt of the Necrodancer, What Remains to Be Defense. So are any of those, like, do they pop out as, like, an interesting connection? You had talked about Tunic earlier.
I did. I think for me, Tunic is a more rounded experience of stuff that I look for in gaming. I think it has more of, they both have that puzzle aspect, but Tunic also has like the combat, the exploration is more so in Chance of Sinar is more of like, you can just keep going to the next room until you've seen everything and then you have to go back and try to then keep talking to people or looking at words and signs and stuff to solve it, where Tunic has that more whimsical exploration, or you find a shortcut and all of a sudden you've popped out in somewhere that you had been early. You're like, oh, I could have gone here the whole time, but I didn't know that that was there.
Right.
Then I also really enjoyed engaging with Tunic's end game puzzle. I didn't do all of it, but there was some very enjoyable times where I sat down with a notebook and was writing out different things for the puzzles. And so
I think Tunic is a much more full game, whereas Chance of Sinar is extremely streamlined in what it's doing. And I don't think it's a bad thing. But I think that based on what you said, I think it makes sense for Chance of Sinar to be below Tunic. But right below Tunic is Neon White. And I feel like even though they're extremely different games, they have very, like, their comparison is easy in my head. So Neon White is this action, first-person, like, parkour game that's like laser focused, speedrunning with, you know, a little backstory and stuff sprinkled in. Whereas Chance of Sinar is this language puzzle game with bits of the backstory sprinkled in. Like, you don't need to engage in the backstory at all for either game in order to enjoy the main mechanic of what's going on. Between those two, like, which one, like, do you feel like scratches the itch that it's going after better?
That's tough. Neon White is just so high octane and it's just edge of your seat constantly, and that speedrunning aspect is just very enthralling. I still want to talk about other games, not just place it based off of this one game, but I would say that they both do their focused part very, very high level. I think Chance of Sinar has a better of the world building in the background. I had more enjoyment with that. I kind of bounced off and was frustrated with the writing and the story of Neon White. So as far as like the periphery goes, I put the edge for Chance of Sinar. That wasn't like, it's the exact opposite of what you asked me, but that's my thought.
No, that's okay.
I think the one that, to me, begging to get compared is Chance of Sinar and What Remains of Edith Finch.
Okay. Yeah,
point and clicks or walking simulators, they both have this like forward momentum just going through the game where you just kind of experience, and they both have that one main experience, and you can go through. I mean, Edith Finch is more of a movie-esque experience, so obviously, you know, there's rewatchability in that. So that has, you know, that can hit you on different levels in different stages of your life, because they had such a gambit of, you know,
talking about
people
death,
dying young, people dying old, people dying in freak accidents, people dying of sickness. That I feel as you experience more life, you could go back and go through the game, and different stories might hit you differently and make you reflect on different things just because you have more life and death experience as you get older. Whereas Chance of Sinar might make you like appreciate cultures, it's still a very, the culture is this periphery, the puzzle is the primary focus. I feel like, for better or worse, the luster of doing the puzzle is not there in future plays.
Yeah, I don't know that I would ever play Chance of Sinar again, but I would recommend a Chance of Sinar to anyone who likes puzzles or like that kind of feeling. I almost would say even people who don't love puzzles, I would recommend, I think that Chance of Sinar, and I wouldn't recommend What Remains of Edith Finch to everybody, or probably really anybody. Like, even though I think
there's a lot of specific people, you have specific deep conversations, or you know how people are thinking or processing through stuff, that it's like, hey, I think you'll love this game.
It's kind of funny, because I think that What Remains of Edith Finch is probably our best podcast episode. Maybe it's not. But in my head, it was like our best one. But we rated it pretty low. But it's just kind of funny. Just the things that did come up from talking about it. But I just don't think that video games are the medium to like be like deeply thinking about a specific topic. Even though it's something that we like to do, I don't know how important that is. Like the discussion that comes from a game, how important that is in our ranking. And maybe we should make it more important.
Yeah.
But... So in my gut, I have a gut spot for it. Do you have a gut spot for it right now after we kind of?
I do, but you're not going to agree with me.
That's okay. That's literally what we do. We come here, we disagree, and then we punch each other in the face, and then we start speaking different languages, and then...
It's a whole caboodle. I'm really appreciative of our editors who, like, you know, are able to dub our voices over in English so that you can understand us when we start changing languages.
Yeah. It's actually pretty impressive. I do all the work, so. I would want this to be the new number 10, right above Neon White, right below Tunic. That's my spot in my head. What is your...
My spot is new number 13. Right above Crypto the Necrodancer, right below A Short Hike.
Okay, so let's talk Short Hike, because there's only a couple spots here. Why Short Hike above it?
everything aesthetically about a short hike, the story aspect, the just joy of the game. It's a game that just makes me happy. I had my Steam Deck out on my couch last week, and my wife was sitting next to me, and she goes, "What's that hike game?" And I pulled it open, and I was showing her, and she was laughing at the dialogue, and it's just such a pleasant... I have so much fond memories of just, like, being outside, and, like, it is a game that actively makes me want to go on an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's short, and it's whimsical, and it's personal. And Chance of Sinar makes me think about learning a language for about 4 seconds, and then I say, that sounds way too hard. Yeah. And I also don't like Crypt of the Necrodancer, so.
You just want to push it down a little bit. Yeah, I think that, okay, I understand that process. You said it makes you want to learn a language for about 4 seconds. Did it ever make you want to, like, travel and go, like, visit new places? Because I feel like that, I don't know that I necessarily felt that viscerally in the same way that you do with Short Hike, like, to go out and have an adventure. Whereas Chance of Sinar, like, the more I'm thinking about it, it makes me think of, like, man, like, I'm going on a trip, and I am super excited about going... I know you guys have a trip planned for
going to Greece.
Yeah. And so, like, I don't know. In my head, that's kind of like the same thing, where you're going there and you're going to...
I never once made that connection during my gameplay.
Okay.
It's not something... That's something I think about quite frequently, normally. I love experiencing new cultures and new cities, and seeing the world is something that is just exciting and novel, like you were saying. But I never...
Yeah.
Associated any of those feelings
with the game,
with Chances and Art. I'd actually say I associate a lot of those feelings significantly more with a short hike.
No, I think I agree. I was just curious if that had come up, because when we're talking about it, that's the thing that comes up, that has come up, that we're talking about. But I agree. Short hike was just like, I felt that same like want. I'm okay with putting a Chances and Art just below a short hike. I think that is a totally reasonable spot, especially remembering back to that playing, because a short hike, it's a short game. And Chance of Sinar is not a super long game, but it is a lot longer than a short hike. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So
no, I think I said before, as a father and a husband, every once in a while, just having just a really digestible game that you get really invested in, but then does not have this like time sink long term, is just like, hey, I can just have, you know, a week or a weekend where that's what I do, it's, you know, and then be done with it, move on to something else, or not play video games for a while, do other things. It's just
makes sense. I think that is where it should be, the new number 13 on the queue. Well, Paul, I'm glad we're doing this again. I'm excited to talk about the different games we have coming up. And so we'll see you guys next week on IndieQ.
Later.